Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello everyone, it's Carol Bissett here again with another episode of Only Murders in My Mind. This is episode 6 and I have my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock.
Yeah, I know it's difficult to say. Blame my parents.
I'm getting tired. I'm old and I'm getting tired. And Mike Jackson.
Hello.
Before we get started today, I'd just like to say a big thank you to Michelle Garvin. She's a friend of mine and she's an entrepreneur and businesswoman running her own slimming groups in the Warrington area. The groups are called The Best of You, and you can check them out on social media. I'd like to thank her because she has promoted our podcast in all of her meetings frequently. Thanks, Michelle. You're brilliant.
Can I just say, is that because we're putting people off their food?
No, she just thought, she's an entrepreneur and she's done lots and lots of, she's gone to lots of courses about promoting your subject and your product and everything. Oh. And she was giving me some good advice and she said, I'll promote it for you. And she has, and I really appreciate that.
Because, well, thank you, Michelle.
Yes.
We can maybe put a link in the show notes.
Yes.
People can find on our web. If they've not looked for our website, it's out there.
Yep. We'll do that, John.
What's the address?
onlymurdersinmymind.wordpress.com.
Thank you, Mike.
It just trips off the tongue, doesn't it?
I didn't know that. Now, Mike is going to take the lead on tonight's topic because it's about technology, the way it's changed how we consume crime, AI. Now, we have had some lively discussions at our writers group about AI. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it something down the road? I mean, we use AI in some form now. I mean, spell check and all that sort of thing. But we're talking now about stuff that's really quite advanced. Can an author publish a book that's been written by AI and put their name to it? It's all very contentious. So, Mike, I know you're very interested in AI.
I am indeed, but before we get to AI, let's just take a step back and think about how technology has changed the way we consume crime. Because it's all happening way before AI. I think I've said in previous episodes, I listen to more books nowadays than I read. So I find the whole process of audiobooks fascinating. Because if you get the right narrator, they can bring books to life.
Yeah, they can.
And e-books, another one. When you think, you know, if you've got e-books, you can be going to work on the train, on the underground, for example, down in London, and you can be reading a book off your phone.
Yeah.
Very easy.
Or if you go on holiday, you can take literally thousands of books on your phone or your Kindle or your tablet.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Liz earlier, we were chatting before we started recording, was talking about libraries.
I was indeed, yes.
About the way you can, you know, we all know libraries is where you go to get books, but libraries are also somewhere where you can go to get your books in a technological way. Does that make sense?
Kind of, yeah. Well, our local libraries, we're Warrington residents. They have, it used to be the Libby app and now it's Borrowbox, and I've signed up to it. And it's great because you can browse what's available. Sometimes if a book's out, you can kind of reserve it in the same way as you would a library book that was, you know, in physical form at the library. And you have a loan period, I think it's 2 weeks. So I've just read 3 books from the library and it's great. They arrive on the day or a bit earlier if someone finishes earlier, and you can read them on your phone. And when you're finished, you just click return and there it's gone and you've got your slot open again. So
I mean, that libraries are very often fighting for their existence. So they've had to change with the times. I used to live in Cumbria and the libraries there were shutting. Each town was losing a library on a regular basis. And when I came back to Warrington, it was lovely to see that all the libraries that had been there when I emigrated to Cumbria, we're still there.
I didn't think it was that far.
I was over a border.
Fair enough.
And you know, all power to them. They go so far to try and get people into the library. So we should use it's use them or lose them. That's all there is to it.
Absolutely is. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, ebooks is a massive topic. I mean, I was thinking about this. You know, when you were, say, a kid, how did you get books? How did you read?
Book, a paper book.
Yeah, and where did it come from?
The library.
Yeah.
Most of the library. I didn't use the library very often. Most of mine were from school.
Oh, right, okay.
Used to be able to borrow from the school library.
Wow. See, our school didn't have a great collection of books, so I was always down the local library. Every Saturday we would go as a family.
Yeah.
And books tended to be a treat. I mean, you know, you either went to W.H. Smith's or, I'm trying to think where else. The supermarket had some, actually.
I know my brother was, my oldest brother was into all the classics. Right. And I was quite young at the time, and he bought me every year two or three, you know, Dickens, that sort of thing. And they were beyond me. So my mum used to sit down and read them to me at night. And that's how I got probably into wanting to read more books.
Mm-hmm. It's strange, isn't it? It's just making me think then, because for my O-levels, I'm giving away my age now by talking about O-levels instead of GCSEs. but my O-level English, we were reading Lord of the Flies, a great book. But we all got taken to the local cinema to see the film, which was most unusual to actually see what you were actually reading. Had a great impact too.
See, in our case, they wheeled in the big telly into school to watch the film of Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, but you're younger than me. You know, we didn't have tellies when I was little.
Did GCSEs, you say?
Well, I did O-level English as well, and we did Twelfth Night, and we went to the Everyman to watch it. And I thought I'd be bored stiff, because obviously Shakespearean language is, you know, we'd been through it all at college. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really loved it.
Twelfth Night is my favourite.
It's good.
And it's going to be on at Shakespeare North Playhouse.
Oh.
Yeah.
Where is Shakespeare North Playhouse?
Knowsley.
Oh, not far then.
No, there's Dennis's Malvolio.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah, so there you go.
There's a plug, Les.
Yeah, I should get commission for this.
You should, yeah. But also, I think, going back to technology, we live in an age where everything is instant. You know, mobile phones, information, it's all instant. And it made me think that one of the things that we do a lot more of is this binge watching on television.
Guilty.
In fact, before I came out today, I heard the BBC advertising iPlayer, various things that are on iPlayer, and they actually use the word binge watching.
Yes.
And I'm guilty of that. I mean, for example, I don't know if any of you have seen the Netflix series Fool Me Once by Harlan Coben.
Yeah, very good.
Now, my wife and I binge watch that. It was so intriguing that we just wanted the next one straight away. We didn't want to have to wait a week before it. So we were able to watch episode one, followed by two, followed by three, at our leisure.
It's a page turner with a series, isn't it? You can turn that page by clicking onto the next episode.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, it's so different from the way these things worked for me growing up. Because, you know, you finish watching the episode or whatever it was, you had to be in front of the telly at the right time before we have video recorders. And then you'd have to wait a week for the next one.
That's right.
Yeah, and with books as well. I mean, if you read a volume in the series, then, you know, you couldn't just get the next one. I mean, you'd have to physically go somewhere to get it. And if it was out at the library, you had to wait.
Yes, very frustrating.
If you didn't have it at the bookshop, you had to order it. Whereas now, with ebooks, you'll probably get a prompt saying, you know, read the next one. Click, buy now.
You might like this one.
Now. Yes.
Yeah. They look at what you've read and suggest books, right. Don't
they? The algorithm.
Yay.
But I remember the Harry Potter books.
Yeah.
I love the Harry Potter books. And there was that frustrating long wait between book one and book two and then book three.
Yeah, when there were like massive queues at bookshops.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was actually working in schools at that time. And one of the great things with Harry Potter is that when the new book came out, the whole playground went sort of silent because there were children, literally, this is a primary school, literally over the whole of the playground were just sitting in corners and sitting against walls reading a Harry Potter.
Wow.
Book. Yeah, I used to have a competition with my neighbour at the time, and she read very, very fast. And I think it was, we're getting towards the end now where they were great big thick books.
Yes, oh,
were.
Yes.
You know, the sort that
door stops.
Yeah, yes. The sort that divide into two films, that sort of thing. Mm. And we both got them on the same day. Well, I knew I couldn't beat her because, you know, she would have. She
was a competitive sport, Carol.
She would have sat up all night reading. Yeah. So I was reading it. Now, my son Ben speed reads. And I was getting towards the end and he told me what had happened because he'd read it in between the times I put it down.
Oh.
And I'm like, what?
No.
So.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So spoiler, because he didn't know. And I was going, I can't wait to find out what happens. He went, oh, he dies.
But cheers. Especially a book that long, yes, as well. But you've slogged all your way through it.
It impacts also, I think, on the way that writers write.
Yes,
because I think
absolutely.
Writers nowadays who are writing a series of books, quite often they'll want to have, you know, maybe the first three in the series done and dusted before they release the first one, because they know that readers will want book two as soon as possible.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I personally don't do that. I mean, I will try and release quickly in a series, and that's the thing, this binge reading thing. There's a phenomenon called the whale reader, and these are people who read a lot of books. I mean, we're talking at least a book a day.
Right.
Yeah, I know, I can't imagine that either. And I'm quite a fast reader, you know, when I put my mind to it. But yeah, I mean, I've had emails from people or messages from people saying, you know, oh, I read the first three, whatever it is, over the weekend. When's the next one out?
Yes.
And you have to go, well, you know, I'm looking at 6 months. You know, it's what can you do?
And I suppose the difficulty then for a writer is that you might lose some of those readers because they're not prepared to wait for 6 months. They'll go to somebody else.
But yeah, there are people who, I mean, in more extreme forms, they won't start a series until it's finished.
No.
Because they want to know that the author's going to complete it and not leave them hanging.
Yeah.
And the pre-order is a new thing to me as well, which you get a lot on Amazon now. Mm-hmm. I'll look for a favourite author and see a book cover and go, oh, great. Oh, it's not out till next year. So they're trying to get people to actually pay for the book before it comes out.
Well, the thing is, the money's only deducted.
Once you get the book?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah, so
bad.
You don't pay and then have to wait.
Oh, so it's like ordering it on,
basically.
On spec. And then, that's not as bad.
Because but it means that eyeballs are on the book if it's going up the chart.
Right.
So kind of free
but
publicity,
it's
really.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because that brings me back to what we were talking about, television programmes. I was watching something last night, Too Good to Be True, a new series that started on, I don't know, MyFive, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And at the end, when they said, if you can't wait to next week, you can catch all the episodes, really cheered me up because I enjoyed episode one so much. I'm keen to go to episode two. So I can see how readers might feel the same way.
Yes.
You know, they really enjoy a book. They want to see the next one.
Yeah.
They want to read the next one.
Can I also go back to something that you said about, you know, and Amazon will recommend other things. The whole thing about being able to buy books online and having ebooks in online storefronts and having an algorithm that will look at what you've previously read or bought and will recommend you other things. That is a massive change.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, you might, if you have, say, a local bookshop and a bookseller who knows you well might be able to say, well, you enjoyed this series, so how about trying this one until the next one of that comes out?
Yeah.
But how many people actually have that?
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I used to go into places like WH Smith's and I would go through all the bestsellers and I'd read the back bit and maybe a bit of the first chapter and that sort of thing. Mm. Hardly ever do that anymore because most of my books are on Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the reasons you've said, it's easy to transport. You can put it on your phone if you want to. I would struggle with my eyesight to read off a phone for any length of time.
Mm.
But lots of people do.
Yes.
Lots of people do.
I do.
You know, so it, as you say, it's all. I'm reading, going back to last week's, a cosy murder mystery, Agatha Raisin.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished one last night and downloaded the next one.
Yeah.
While I was upstairs in bed.
Yeah. And that's the thing, it's 24/7. Yeah. In the middle of the night, if you wake up and think, oh, you know, fancy a book to read, you can get one.
Get one.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got Kindle Unlimited, you can borrow them.
Yeah.
But the other thing is about it, that all the books are front out. You know, if you go to a traditional bookshop, and most of the books will be, you'll see the spine of them.
That's right. You see the front cover, don't you?
Yeah, you always see the front cover on Amazon and, you know, Waterstones Online, you will see the front cover. Yeah. Barnes & Noble, you'll see the front cover. Blackwell's front cover.
It's made me think I'm actually missing a trick, because the short story books that I've self-published, they're not in ebook format.
Yeah, you need to get them.
So
though.
I need to do that.
You do. Mm.
Yeah.
So that's another task, as well as a novella I've got to write. I've got to format my books for ebooks.
Yep.
Oh.
Limitless distraction.
Each week they give me more work to do.
but yeah.
We were talking just about audiobooks, and certainly in the last episode, I mentioned the fact that Liz in her magic bookshop has got the first three as audiobooks. But audiobooks are not cheap to make.
No, they're not.
And that's why they're not cheap to buy either. Mm. But, and this is the segue into AI, with AI, of course, things are changing so rapidly that you can actually record quite cheaply, very cheaply, in fact, your own audiobooks. I play around with something called 11 Labs, and I can type into that, and I have a library of voices that will read the story out for me. So, you know, there is going to be a point. I've actually heard of one or two writers who are starting to do this with some of their novellas, starting to use AI so that they can cheaply create an audiobook, which they will then sell through their own website or anything at a much reduced rate, while at the still same time using professional voice actors to do other audiobooks. Mm. So it's that hybrid, that mixture of both.
Yeah, it's that kind of two-tier thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So, because I asked people on my newsletter subscription list how they felt about it. And, you know, I had some, because I'd recorded a little sample using AI. And I put that on, you know, as a free download and said, what do you think? And lots of people said, actually, it was a lot better than I thought. But there were people saying, I would never, ever listen to an AI audiobook. I just wouldn't. Mm. So, and the thing is, as you said, some narrators are so very skilled.
Oh, yes.
Human narrators, this is. And there are people who will follow a narrator.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're basically whatever that person reads, I will listen to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think what's going to happen, because the whole AI sector is getting so sophisticated, is that some of those narrators will tie themselves into some of these AI companies for their voices, because that's where the money's going to be made.
You know, but the problem is, are those narrators going to make the money?
That's going to be the next thing.
It needs to be a lucrative deal for them as well. Yeah.
There was a big film strike, wasn't there?
SAG-AFTRA, wasn't it?
Yeah. Because of AI taking over certain aspects of creative people, stunts and all this sort of thing. So you can see, I mean, going to the basic element of going into the local store now, there being so many self-checkouts. Mm. I, again, probably because of my age, like to go to one where there's a person, because that person's got a job. Mm. But if you've got three things in your basket, you're going to go to the self-checkout.
Yes.
I was in Boots, I think, or WH Smith's at Euston Station, and a lady asked me how she bought something because there was nobody there. You had to go through self-service.
Right.
And she was really confused, and I showed her how to purchase something. So,
yeah.
I'm going to now take us down the AI road for two reasons. One, it's quite a controversial road to go down. Yes. And to date, we've not been controversial. And also, I'm a great lover, enthusiast of AI, all things AI. I love creating AI-generated images. And I've been doing a lot of playing around with AI and writing. And there's a few podcasts that I follow and a few Facebook groups that I belong to. And it's amazing how vitriol people can be, other writers can be, about AI. I recently, on my blog, where I put some short stories, I put a 100-word story up. And I said right at the beginning, before I put the story up, I said, look, this story was created mainly with AI, something called ChatGPT. A little bit of help from me, you know, I sort of fed in what sort of story I wanted, but it was written by AI. I'd like your, you know, your thoughts. And by golly, I got some thoughts. but the interest, I'll read some of them out to you, because to me, they say a lot about how lots of writers fear AI. Somebody wrote, "Sorry, Mike, but if it's AI generated, I'm not interested in reading it." Now, to me, that's a very close mind. Just because he saw AI, he wasn't prepared to read it and then comment on, "Well, I didn't like the story," or whatever.
Yeah, that's a refusal to engage, isn't
to engage.
It?
Yes. Yeah. Somebody wrote, it talked about the story. "It's decent, but I can't promote your methods." You know. Somebody else wrote, "It's not a bad story, but it's not a good story because you didn't write it."
So if you hadn't told them, would it have been a good story?
Yes.
Yeah. Some sort of a backhanded compliment, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the interesting thing. If I'd not mentioned that it was written by AI, I would have got lots of positive comments about that story. And I suppose my feeling is there are lots of positives about AI in terms of how it can help writers, in terms of producing plot lines, giving you ideas, helping with your blurbs for books and all sorts. But there's also getting to a stage where it can actually help you edit your stories and even maybe write some stories.
It's like, well, I think there's AI components now in some editing software which you can choose or not. In fact, Hemingway, I think, now has
components.
Has some AI components,
WordPress, Liz and I have both got WordPress sites. And with those now, you can get it to write, you can get AI to write an excerpt about the post. And it will just generate. And you can say, "I want a 50, 60, 70 word excerpt about what the post is about."
See, now that I get completely, because, you know, the idea of summarising. I mean, who enjoys summarising here?
Yeah.
Nobody. But my thing is, you know, when you say about, "Oh, well, you can get it to, like, do a plot for you, you can get it to write for him," like, these are the fun bits. Why do I want to give someone else the fun bits? Yeah. You know, what am I going to be left with then?
I'm just thinking about somebody I've read recently, and I'm not going to mention the person's name, the author. But as we're talking now, I felt there was something wrong with the dialogue, and I'm just wondering whether it was AI produced. It just didn't feel right. I could be completely wrong. That's why I'm not going to say
I think you're probably
anything.
Right. I think what people don't appreciate, that AI is no more than a tool. And it's like anything technological. If you put rubbish in, you'll get rubbish out. So whatever, AI won't write anything on its own. It will only write if you prompt it to write. And therefore, it depends very much on what sort of prompts you're getting.
And it may require several, as you say, refinements, iterations.
Yes, it does.
To get what you want.
Get what you want. And that's what I think people don't appreciate. They seem to think this machine has just turned up one day and written a story.
I'll be back.
A funny thing, it made me think back to William Caxton and the invention of the printing press.
Were you there?
Back in the 15th century. Sometimes I feel as though I might have been.
It's the way you tell me, makes me think back too.
But I came across
I
came across a quote. A chap called Filippo de Strata was a monk and a scribe in the 15th century. And this is what he said about the new printing press. "The pen is a virgin, the printing press is a whore."
Ooh. Are monks supposed to say things like that?
And I think in the 21st century, there are many writers who would say, "The pen is a virgin, AI is a whore." And it makes you wonder what history will think of those people. Because AI is not going away. And it's only going to get much, much more sophisticated.
I haven't got any grandchildren, but my my friends have, and I was talking to them last week, and they were saying about how their grandchildren do their homework. Google, 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 it's done. And fair enough, I was a swot. I was teacher's pet, but I used to sit there and pore over books from the library or even go to the library and do my work that way. What is the learning process going to be like for people that just Google it and then print something off. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like anything, though, isn't it? I mean, I was a teacher for 30-odd years, and I often think, why do we have to teach children specific facts when they can actually pick their phone out of their pocket and find it out? So do you need to teach them what is the capital of Italy when they can just as easily, rather than remember it, they can just as easily find it on their phone? I remember in the 80s when I was a young teacher, there was lots of fuss because primary schools were going to start using computers.
Yes. Yeah.
And there was a big outrage that this was going to be cheating. This was going to stop children from learning maths. Now, we look back on that and think how ludicrous. But at the time, it wasn't ludicrous. It was very bad. Mm. These people really believed this could be detrimental to children's learning of maths.
We are scared generally of technology.
Yes, we are.
And we always have been. You know, as you say, going back to the printing. Well,
it threatens the status quo, doesn't
it?
It
does.
And when the, what were the Luddites? What did they destroy? The machines? Weaving.
Was it looms? Looms. Weaving machines. Yeah. And
because it was going to put people out of work. Mm-hmm. You know, so you just look back and see. But as you say, Mike, it's here to stay, and it's only going to get more and more advanced. It's making huge leaps and bounds, isn't it?
If I may, something I've been playing around with recently. One of the things with AI, with ChatGPT, which is the one I use, is that it gives you things instantly. Going back to what we were talking about that instant gratification, it can spit things out in seconds. And as an experiment, I recently asked AI to invent a writer in the year 2074. And this is, I'll give you a little bit about what it said. Chap's name was Julian Drake. Julian was born in 2029 in Neo San Francisco, a city rebuilt with cutting edge technology after a series of natural disasters in the mid 21st century. He showed no early talent for storytelling, often creating elaborate tales with his AI companions as a child. He pursued a degree in creative writing and artificial intelligence at the University of New Pacifica, merging his love for storytelling with emerging technologies. Julian's breakthrough novel, Neon Shadows, was published in 2016 and became an instant hit for its intricate plot and futuristic setting. He is known for blending classic murder mystery stories with speculative technological advancements such as AI detective, cybernetic enhancements, and virtual reality crime scenes.
Right. I'm just thinking, do you want to approach this Julian and see if he'll co-write your novella?
Well, what I have done, I have approached him and asked him to do an interview for our podcast.
Right.
And that printed it out. And so what I'm thinking of doing at some stage in the future is going back to the 11 Labs, putting it into that, so that we then have a voice for Julian.
So we can talk to Julian.
Yes.
So the next thing I asked was, well, if this Neon Shadows, which he published in 2060, his debut novel, can you give me an excerpt from it? And of course it could.
I hope it's respecting copyright here.
Yeah. So Eva is the AI assistant. Eva stands for Enhanced Virtual Assistant. So I'll just read you a bit of what his novel contains. Akira Tanaka stood at the edge of the crime scene, his gaze piercing through the neon-bathed room. The body lay sprawled on the floor amidst the chaos of overturned furniture and shattered glass. The apartment's windows offered a panoramic view of Neo-Tokyo, the city's lights flickering like distant stars in an artificial sky. Detective Tanaka, Eva's voice chimed in his ear. Preliminary scans indicate no signs of forced entry or struggle. Cause of death is not immediately apparent. Akira grunted, his eyes still fixed on the scene. Scans don't solve cases, Eva. They just add pieces to the puzzle. He crouched beside the body, examining the engineer's expression, eyes wide open, a look of surprise frozen in time. The human element always unpredictable, Eva observed, her tone a blend of curiosity and programmed empathy. A smile tugged at the corner of Akira's lips. That's what makes it interesting. He stood up, dusting off his hands. Let's go over the facts. What do we know about our victim? And so it goes on.
Yeah, it's interesting, I must admit. You know, I'd probably read more of that if somebody presented it to me. Yeah,
I expected it to be more futuristic. I mean, I know you've got the AI assistant, but because haven't you been reading a book recently with an AI as a character?
I have. It's called In the Blink of an Eye. It's a debut novel from a lady called Jo Callaghan. And it's all about a detective who has been off work for a while, comes back in. I think she's a senior detective. And when she comes back to work, her boss says, right, we've got to ease you back in. We've got to do this experiment. The university have come up with an AI detective or an AI entity to help detection. And we want you to run the pilot. And she's not at all interested. But she ends up working alongside this AI entity called Locke, which is basically, it's a bracelet on her wrist. But when she touches various things, this comes out as a hologram.
All right.
Or if she says, can you tell me the path the victim took before he disappeared, it can produce a hologram of the victim walking along the towpath or something.
Ooh,
very sophisticated.
And when it comes to things like looking at CCTV, whereas it would take a couple of policemen maybe 3 or 4 days to go through it all, it goes through it all in 5 minutes. And fascinating book, really good read. And the thing that struck me most was it's not as futuristic as it might have been if it had been written 2 years ago. Because I think AI is so that it probably could go through lots of CCTV images in a matter of minutes.
Yeah. Well, as I say, there is a software out there for face recognition, not that quick, but much quicker than it would be for, as you say, detectives looking at CCTV. Mm-hmm. I read, when we're talking about sort of technology and social media, etc., I love the Galbraith books. The one that I liked the least was The Ink Black Heart, and I think that's because it was written, like you were saying before, about, you know, sort of it's emails, texts, there's a game involved, a computer game, and I found it quite confusing at times because the language, I found it difficult to sort of, well, shorthand in text, you know, it could be Japanese for all I know, because when I do text, I write the whole word out.
Yeah.
You know, but that was showing that, you know, how crime can be driven by text being deleted. And the thrust of this story was that people were killing over this, the rights of this game. It's one out of all the ones she's written that I suspect it's going to be the next one for a series as well.
But it just shows, because I think it might have been the last episode where I talked about The Appeal by Janice Hallett.
Yes.
And that's written almost entirely as a set of text messages.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I mean, you know, back in the day, at the beginning of novels, really, you had the epistolary novel, which was set up as a set of letters from different people. And it's a modern version of that, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's the way we're going. And as I say, it's, I mean, the, what was it? Adrian Mull's Diaries, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and that was just his thought processes put down on paper. Thoroughly enjoyed it. It was really successful seller. Mm-hmm. But this is just going in. Well, not one step forward, it's going lots of steps forward.
And again, there's that thing of, you know, with emails, you can respond to someone almost immediately, assuming you've got Wi-Fi, of course.
Yeah.
So,
anywhere too. You don't have to be attached to a computer.
Yeah, you don't have to find a stamp and go out and post it.
No. Again, the downside of that, to me, is how careful you've got to be how you phrase something, because it can come across as abrupt when it's not meant to be, you know. That's why I like my smiley faces and things.
But that, of course, is one of the problems with the youngsters nowadays.
Oh, the youngsters.
Politicians, that they're not careful about their WhatsApp messages and their email messages.
Well, and sometimes they're so careful that the whole thing's completely disappeared.
But 9 times out of 10, it comes down to bite them in the bottom. But going back to what I was saying about AI,
yes,
I am going to immerse myself into AI. You know, so this book I'm thinking of writing, a new book of short stories, many of those are going to have an AI base to them, because what I'm able to do, what I have done, I won't go into the technical part of this, but anybody who knows ChatGPT, you can actually create GPTs, which basically is a way of training the AI to write in your style. So yeah. What I've done is I put a lot
of... You've done a few of these, haven't you? Didn't you do a graphic novel one?
I've done a graphic novel one as well to create images. Mm. So with this one I've done for 100 Word Stories, it's learned my tone, my style, my voice, and now create 100 Word Stories similar to the ones that I've written.
So are we calling you Mr. Frankenstein of the... AI world.
Yeah, I think I might get kicked out of the writing group.
But, well, given that you run it, I think you're fairly safe.
Fairly safe. Can I just maybe finish this off with a quiz?
Yep.
Why not? You two, but also for all our readers out there. I'm going to read two stories. They're both 100 word stories, which I enjoy writing. They both fit into the murder mystery. One of them, or maybe both of them, were written by me. And one of them, or maybe both of them, were purely written by AI.
Interesting.
So I leave you to tell me which. So the first one's called Marcia Jenkins. Marcia Jenkins was 33 years old when she killed her husband. It wasn't premeditated, it was survival. The night was ink black, the air thick with tension. As thunder roared, their once tranquil home transformed into a battleground. Marcia's heart raced, her breath shallow. In a moment of sheer desperation, she reached for the antique lamp on the bedside table, a wedding gift, and swung. The deed done, silence engulfed her. She stood, shaking, amidst the chaos of shattered dreams and broken vows. Marcia had never felt more alive. Freedom, however darkly obtained, was hers. In that instant, she was reborn. And then the second one is called... Involved the police and the lady dies. I lit another cigarette and waited, my eyes fixed on the phone opposite me. Even though I'd been expecting it, the shrill tone of the phone ringing made me jump. I lifted the receiver and listened. A muffled voice said, "Do exactly what I say and everything will be all right. 20,000 in used notes. We'll tell you where. Involved the police and the lady dies." Then the phone went dead. I leaned against the wall and slowly finished the cigarette, wondering if the lady in question, my wife, was worth £20,000. On balance, I decided she wasn't.
Ooh. Mike's wife again getting on the rough side of things.
So,
yes.
Either of them AI generated? Both of them AI generated?
I think we give you our opinions in the next episode, which gives the listeners a chance to tell us what they think.
Yeah,
I think
cliffhanger.
You two are at an advantage because you've heard lots of my...
We know your voice when it comes to writing. Yes. Yeah. So that was really interesting. Right, so again, thank you everybody for listening. We really appreciate the fact that you are out there and I hope you're enjoying it. We're enjoying doing it, aren't we, folks?
We are indeed. And we'd love to hear what your thoughts are.
Yeah. So if you've got any suggestions for what you'd like us to talk about, of criminal nature. Yeah.
Any comments, as long as they're nice.
We're looking for things to do with crime, but we're interested to know what people think, obviously. So our next episode, we're talking about Agatha Christie. Who doesn't love a good Agatha Christie? So we've called it the Agatha Christie Fest, if I can say it properly. So thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. And just remember, screaming's not for the ghost train. You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Produced by John Bissett. The music, In Peril, was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.